Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Experience the unconventional.
Hello.
The unpredictable.
Don't you think that's a bit weird?
And the completely unorthodox.
It was my birthday.
With rule-free Ian Lee.
I was just trying to generate a bit of content.
The late night alternative with Ian Lee.
Hate alarm clock. Hate going to work.
On Talk Radio.
She's kicked off her high heel shoes, made of the Spanish leather. She's put on an old pair of brogues to follow the gypsy laddie. Late at night her lord come home and he's inquiring for his lady. The servant's down on his knees and said she's away with seven gypsies.
Well, it is Saturday morning, it's 9:42, and I'm off to interview Nick Jones, a man who I knew nothing about until I heard a brilliant programme on Radio 4, 4 Extra, actually, 1:30 in the morning a few months ago. And since then, I've become vaguely obsessed. Now, I'm driving all the way, it's near Tavistock. It's miles away. Let me just see exactly where we're going. It's 4 hours and 19 minutes away. 226 miles. So, man alive, I hope to get there by about, if I can get there for 2:30, take it nice and easy, that'll be good. And we'll have a chat with Nick Jones and his wife, Julia, who have been incredibly accommodating and very kind. Right, let's go.
'56, I sailed on board a ship called Byron One. She's carried trawler men on deck and a harpoon, whaling gun. Oh, you trawler men, come on, forget your snapper and your prawn. For it's out of Ballinor we'll sail, fishing for the humpback whale.
Hello, I'm Ian. How lovely to meet you at last. Well, be gentle with your hand. Nice to see you.
Tendonitis or something. No. Something like that, RSI. They don't know, they just give you a load of painkillers.
Painkillers and a little thing to put on. Yeah. How are you doing?
Okay, thank you.
Nice to meet you at last.
Yeah, come through.
Thank you.
You're tall.
I'm quite tall, yes. There is that. This area is amazing.
It is.
Beautiful. Yes. Absolutely beautiful.
Which way? Did you come over Dartmoor?
I came through Dartmoor, yeah.
Nick.
Hey, it's Nick.
Ian.
I'm Ian.
Hey.
Nice to meet you at last. How
are
you doing, sir?
Yeah, fine.
I brought a bottle of wine just to say thank you very much for letting me come, come and say hello.
Great.
It's nice to meet you.
Yeah. Would you like
to come down from?
I'm Aylesbury. So, just taken 4 hours or so.
That's not bad, actually.
It's not bad, and it's a lovely drive.
Yeah.
Listening to some Nick on the way, listening to some radio.
It was a mistake.
What?
Bad mistake.
Go and have a think. Can I get you a tea or a coffee?
Coffee would be lovely, please. White, no sugar.
Proper coffee, as opposed to instant.
Proper coffee, if you have a proper coffee. All right, well, I'm in the house with Nick Jones. Nice to meet you, Nick.
That's okay.
tell how long you've been in this house, because this is incredible. It's an amazing view out of that window.
It's a lovely place. Yeah, been here about 10 years. Yeah. 10 years so. Before that, we were in rubbish places at Yorkshire.
And you can't say Yorkshire. Is Yorkshire rubbish? No.
What's the place? Cambridgeshire as well. No, that was rubbish too. And Chelmsford, that was even worse. So whenever we moved, we'd always hate the places where we moved. This is the first place where I actually moved in and wanted to be here.
What's so different about this place,
though? I don't know. It feels nice. You know? Yeah. And it was a wreck which we had to redo. We had to rebuild it. You know.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Okay. Yeah, a lot of it had to be rebuilt. Because there were no floors, you know, everything was a real mess. And the whole place was yellow, it was painted yellow, and it was a ridiculous, awful place.
I should say, it's now a very tasteful white.
Yeah.
There are floors. You've got floors.
That's great. There are wooden floors over there. But
Your cat is drinking milk out of that milk jug. Come on now, Smudge. That's not for you, is it? Unbelievable.
She likes milk. Cats like milk.
Apparently it's bad for cats.
Yeah.
You're not supposed to give them milk.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I didn't know that. I thought that was something that they liked to have and they were okay with it.
Now, Nick, I was saying, I'm going to be honest, I hadn't heard of you until about 4 or 5 months ago. Well, I told you, I have a strained relationship with English folk and I've tried it and I would keep dipping in. Shall I push her down? Come on, Smudge, that's not... She's gone. I would keep trying to dip in. Well, don't whack her with your cane. It's not that bad. There was just something about it. I just couldn't. There would be a couple of songs, and I just couldn't quite get into it. And then I heard this documentary about you on... It was on 4 Extra, 1:30 in the morning. And just the story blew me away, and we'll talk about the story in a bit. But, man, you're...
What was the story?
You were on the way up and then you hit a truck. I mean, that's the story.
It's pretty good, yeah.
It's not
a bricks.
We'll get there in a minute. But the music grabbed me. It was the first time I'd heard English folk, or you know, at least a kind of variation on it, where it made me go, "Whoa, this is incredible." How did you get started?
By having a method of playing,
right,
which was to hit the guitar and got a nice beat out of it.
Yeah.
And you whack it with your ball of your thumb hits the bridge and you get a clicking, and it gives you like a drummer sound with the guitar, and that supported the guitar.
But how did you develop that? When did you? And I'm aware that your memory's not as good as it was. You've warned me, so there may be some blanks or there may be some lies. We just don't know. But do you remember when you first got a guitar? Who were you trying to be when you first picked up?
Trying to be Hank Marvin.
No, really,
Hank Marvin. Yeah.
Wow.
He's a great guitar player, I felt, and I wanted to be like him. So I played things like Apache and the Frightened City, and I played them on the guitar to learn. And I had a guitar, but it was the first guitar I got was a Chinese, and it cost me £4.10.
Yeah.
That's 10 shillings, that was old money. And I bought this guitar and trying to learn to play Hank Marvin stuff on this guitar.
People, I think Hank's been kind of forgotten, that he was sort of the first British guitar hero that we had, and he inspired a lot of people, and he's sort of been consigned to the history books a bit, I think.
Yeah, but he's a great, great guitar player, he was great. And the Shadows were ace. I didn't like Cliff Richards very much. I found him a bit of a strange character, but I didn't really like him very much, but I liked the guitar playing.
Well, then how... Because Hank Marvin was kind of rock, I guess, you could rock and roll.
Really?
How did you then move from that to folk music and traditional folk music as well?
Well, I was asked to join a group by some people who lived at the Halliard, and they were a group in Chelmsford.
Yeah.
And they played in this folk club they owned. And the guy who, the main singer, he used to have a magazine, which was, I don't know what it's called, just called Folk Music, I suppose, something like that. And
a title.
And he did the club. He had to own the club, and he wanted to keep the group going. And the guitar player at the time, Jeff Harris, he was a good guitar player, but he was leaving. He didn't want to become a professional, and he wanted to stay at home and do his job.
Yeah.
Whereas the others, we wanted to get around and get some money and get some guitars and
get some girls, I'm guessing, as well.
Just as
Julia walks in, sorry.
It's all sorts of good fun. And then I played the guitar, so I said, I'll help you out play the guitar a bit in the group, and I'll go around with you. We'll do a few bookings. And so I've become a professional at that point, a professional singer, because I didn't really like doing the jobs that I'd been doing.
What were you doing? What was your day job?
The best job, actually, was as a lifeguard in a swimming pool, the Chelmsford swimming pool.
Wow.
And that was really good. But most of the jobs I was doing were office jobs, you know. And I tried to be, you know, sort of Mr. Smarty Pants in London, and it was rubbish. It was awful. Awful stuff. And so I wanted to stop that working. And I thought, the idea of singing a few songs and getting money for that was a great idea. And I realised that there was good money there.
What year was this, roughly? Do you remember?
Late 70s, early 60s. I'm trying to think.
Well, it probably would have been like mid-60s, maybe 64, 65.
Yeah. Well, I was about 20-ish when we started started playing in the group, and that was 47. That would be 67.
Okay,
67.
Because were you never tempted? Because obviously, people think of 67, they think of like Sergeant Pepper and the Beatles and the Stones and all of that.
Yeah,
you were never tempted to go down the rock route, the psychedelic kind of.
That's what I wanted to do.
Really?
Yeah.
You want to do folk?
No.
Oh.
No, I just got this opportunity to get a few shekels, get a few bookings here.
You hauled yourself out to get some. Oh, good for you, okay.
Yeah, I wanted to play rock and roll.
Yeah.
I wanted to be Hank Marvin playing Stratton City. That's what I was after doing.
But you ended up in the folk group.
Yeah.
Doing the rounds. How much were you getting paid for those gigs?
Well, I think at the time, it was about 20 quid per booking.
That's not bad for mid to late 60s, is it? That's pretty
good.
Yeah,
it was okay. It's good. It's good money. And also, the fact that it took an hour. What I didn't realise, and I should have really thought about it, was that really the majority of the job was actually driving.
Right, yeah.
You know, it's driving, not singing. Singing, you sing for an hour.
Yeah.
You drive for about 6 hours. Yeah.
I've heard musicians say they do the gigs for free. They get paid for the travelling.
Yeah.
That's what they earn their money for.
Yeah, and that's what wrecked me in the end is the travelling. And I used to go. I used to do a series of folk clubs, and then the last booking on a tour, I'd drive home, which was after the singing. So, and I was whacked out tired.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's what happened. I fell asleep and whacked a lorry.
Well, let's do that, and then we'll go back to the music. So I want to kind of celebrate the music. But an integral part of your story is the car crash after a gig. When was this? 82? 82.
Something like that. Yeah,
so
I don't remember.
No. Of course you wouldn't remember. Sorry, I didn't. Of course you
wouldn't. Run for the bricks.
You don't remember any of the night? You played a gig. From what I have read, you played a gig. Driving.
Glossop, it was.
Glossop,
that's where the booking was.
Do you remember the gig at all?
No.
No.
No. I did it because I did most of the towns in England. I did at some point. Yeah.
When you were gigging around that era, late 70s, early 80s, what was the setup? Was it just you with a guitar going off in a car on your own?
Yeah, you drive for a few hours to get to Manchester or somewhere and do the Manchester Folk Club, get some money, and then go home if possible, or if I was got another booking in Manchester region, I'd then stay overnight somewhere.
B&B.
Yeah, and I also stay with some of the folk club, some of the folk operators. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I used to do a tour for about maybe a week or so. I'd do in the same region. I'd do say Liverpool, Manchester. You know, what's the other place? Birmingham, and then
go to an area for a week, hang out, and then come back home. So the accident, you're driving home, and you only know this because people have told you what happened.
Yeah.
You hit a truck carrying a load of bricks.
Yeah, yeah. What happened? I think I fell asleep. I think I don't remember this at all.
Julia is shaking her head. Do you want to tell us?
Well, you don't know for something.
I know certain.
I mean, I drove over there so many times, going back and forth to the hospital, and he'd just gone over a little bridge, and you shake. So I don't. It was a bend, a notorious bend that has a road off it that reflects lights often if a car was parked up there. So he, we're not sure he went to sleep, or they reckon that he didn't
sleep.
I'm going to
come over here a little bit. This is.
He had a burst tyre, but that was probably caused through the accident. And it was a new car. So whether he was fiddling. You don't know. I don't know, but I don't think it was assumed you fell asleep, because for him that time of night was quite normal.
Right.
That new car. I've probably got a heater.
Maybe the heater. Yeah. I don't know. Who knows? We'll never know, Nick. But
maybe the guy came out without any lights on.
You're thinking of Prince Philip now.
Yeah.
You're getting things confused.
Yeah. Well, it was very strange that a friend of the driver's actually came round to see me, which I thought was very odd, asking, did Nick remember anything about the accident? But that may have just been genuine concern.
When did you, Julia, find out that he'd been in a really serious accident?
Well, about a couple of hours after. I was already up. I knew something was wrong.
Yeah.
And so I was up waiting almost for a knock at the door.
Yeah. Wow. I can't even begin to imagine that must have been
horrible. Yes, I mean, it was. But I think, you know, people, it must be the same for people whose husbands do anything. Yeah. They're on the road a lot. There's always that possibility, isn't there? And it's just that you get a sort of a sense of something. I always used to wake up just before he came in.
Yeah. Right, okay, yeah.
And we always worked out roughly how far away he was.
Yeah.
Where he was thinking, oh, nearly there. Whatever it is.
Yeah.
I don't
want to dwell on the accident. So a couple more questions, then we'll kind of go back to the music, because that's the important stuff, and the accident is horrible. But...
That's a great accident.
Thank you. But you did nearly die.
Oh, yeah, I did.
When you came...
It took all the blood off me. It took all the blood out of me.
All of it?
No.
They replaced it with some other stuff.
Oh, we've got to put some other stuff in there. When you came out... Is it true? I've heard that when people come out of a coma or a stroke, and they struggle to speak, that all they can remember are swear words. Is that true?
Yeah. Yeah.
So you'll just...
But I had a few months before I came out of the swear words.
Really?
I was out for a count.
Yeah, but they were the first words, more or less. Yeah.
And I've heard this from a few people.
He'd make up words.
Right.
So you'd get odd words like oblong.
Oblong? Yeah.
Pajabas? Pajamas, Nick? No, not... Never knew what they meant. Swear words. And I remember another singer, Tony Rose, his father had... I think he had a stroke or something.
Yeah.
He said, I've never heard his father swear in his whole life. He said, and this torrent of abuse came out.
I've heard if you go to stroke wards, because I don't know, I guess it's because the F word and the S word, they mean everything. They can mean, you know, beautiful things and horrific. They can mean everything, can't they?
So my means of expression, it's a necessity. You have to swear.
Let's go back to the music a bit. Your Penguin Eggs is a masterpiece. When did that come out? 81?
80.
Looking to the historian over there. What do you remember anything about that, recording that album, realising that this was something really different from what you'd done before?
No, I never think that much about. I never think about it much. When else I'd done it, I'd done it, and I forget about it then. I never listened to it much. Never used to listen to my own records.
Because it's cited as like one of the top 100 albums of all time, one of the 50 albums you must listen to before you die.
In between, who was it? Good rock singer. What's his name?
Was David Bowie one of them?
David Bowie, yeah. And Rolling Stones. Yeah. Well, I was in between them.
That's not bad, is it?
Yeah.
Number 79.
Not that you're keeping score or anything, but that's something to be. I mean, that's something to be incredibly proud of.
Yeah, great, yeah.
And Bob Dylan nicked your... Didn't he nick a song off you?
Kennedy Owl.
Kennedy Owl.
Kennedy Owl.
That's a great song. Yeah. He nicked it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
He's famously... I mean, I wouldn't want to call him a plagiarist, but...
He's a great songwriter.
He's a little bit of a tea leaf as well.
He's a great performer. I heard him in Perth, in Australia, doing a concert there, and he was really great.
I'm late to Dylan. I couldn't get into Dylan for years, and then last year I think it was Blind Willie McTell. I don't know if you know that song. That opened the gateway to Bob Dylan. I'm seeing him in concert in July for the first time. I hear his concerts these days are very hit or miss. It's either going to be amazing or it's going to be a car crash. We shouldn't really use that phrase. I just realised how inappropriate that was. Sorry, that wasn't deliberate.
The radio show where the owls are not what they seem.
Do you or have you ever watched Twin Peaks?
The Late Night Alternative with Ian Lee.
They could be dreaming and meeting each other in their dreams.
On Talk Radio.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Excuse me.
Oh, Dad.
Hello, I'm Martin Kellner.
And I'm his daughter, Ruthie.
We do a podcast. It's called Ruthie, Me and My Dad.
In which I tell him how he's wrong about most things.
And I explain to her who the Bee Gees were. It's on Acast and Apple Podcasts.
And all your favourite podcast providers.
It's a unique generation gap conversation between a baby boomer dad...
and his Generation Z daughter.
That's Ruthie, Me and My Dad. Brand new episodes every Thursday.
The radio show that knows truth is always stranger than fiction.
Week Monday, I get shoes.
The Late Night Alternative with Ian Lee.
Because they're too real to be part of my imagination.
On Talk Radio.
You were saying before we started talking, you did the first two solo albums in 70, 71, I think they were.
Yeah, were they?
You don't rate them, though.
Oh, rubbish.
No, they're not, though, man. Why do you think that?
They were good. But the songs were never... They meant nothing, really, to me. I mean, that was a good thing. In a way, the songs meant nothing to me, because I didn't really like traditional folk songs. And what I wanted to do, actually, was, at the end, I was trying to change to become a contemporary singer rather than a traditional singer.
Right.
But I was known as a traditional singer who did ballads and all this stuff. And I didn't want to be that. I wanted to write songs myself, so I started to write.
So is that why there was the big gap between the first two albums and then the next album? There's a gap of sort of 6, 7 years, something like that. Is that because you just didn't know what you wanted to say?
Probably. I mean, it was laziness, because I was very lazy.
You're a lazy man.
I've always been a very lazy man. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I wasn't very, very lazy. Yeah. But it's saved me in a lot of senses, yeah. So if I wanted to become a songwriter rather than just a singer, you know. And I didn't really have any connection with any of traditional songs much, you know.
Right.
And so I wanted to sing songs which express what I felt myself.
So are you saying, because I saw on one of the albums that you covered a Loudon Wainwright song and a Randy Newman song. Are those the kind of people you were aspiring to be?
Yeah, yeah. Hit Me With a Rhythm Stick was one song which got me going.
Really? Ian Jury?
Yeah, it's fantastic.
You didn't record that, did you?
No, I didn't.
God, I'd love to hear a Nick Jones version of that. Imagine!
It was a great, great song. Yeah. But also the swimming song that... Loudon Wainwright did. And that was from the McGarrigle Sisters. I learned from the McGarrigle Sisters.
Right.
Because that one of them was married to...
Of course.
Loudon Wainwright.
Yeah.
And in the end, and she died now.
Yeah.
But they were great as a group, the McGarrigle Sisters. Yeah. I fell in love with them. They were fantastic.
We had Loudon on the show. He came on the show, and man alive, he can tell stories. It's obvious in his songs and his book that he wrote last year. He's an incredible man. Have you met him?
No.
Never
met him. He's a great, great guy.
Yeah.
Oh, I say he was a great guy. I don't know whether he's a great
guy. He may have been a bastard, for all we know. No, I suspect not. I suspect he wasn't.
Really boring. he might be bigger, don't know.
He was being recorded by a friend of ours who told him that Nick had recorded the swimming song. And what had happened to Nick. And at the end of the show, after the show had turned off, he recorded the swimming song for Nick and said, Here, Nick, buddy.
A few other songs he put on the tape, didn't he?
I don't know whether Ralph did, but he did that for you.
Yeah.
So that was really nice.
Yeah, it's a good chat there.
After the accident, did you were you frustrated? Because obviously you were physically damaged. Yeah. You couldn't play guitar as well or at all.
Mainly because of the right hand.
Right.
All the thing of the right hand was the outside of the car. Everything was smashed: the legs, arms, everything, and my eyes, everything. And it's outside. And the right hand was never there. To play with the rhythm,
because
I don't know how to play the rhythm.
That's your technique.
Yeah, to get the rhythm, but I could never get the beats, and I had to spend ages trying to get the rhythm, being able to pluck the strings, and I couldn't organise these fingers at all, and they started to after a while it started to come back. Starting to come back now.
And there's obviously a little bit of, I hope this doesn't sound offensive, brain damage.
Oh, yeah.
In as much as that you forget words and you get a little bit jumbled and you're quite forgetful. That may be old age, Nick, I don't know.
No, I had to relearn the whole language.
Did you?
Yeah, I had to relearn. And they're these lovely nurses, they taught me all these words that I never knew, like promise and will you and won't you.
Wow.
And amazing, they taught me the words I didn't know.
As a performer and as a songwriter and as a musician, that must have been, frustrating. Can't even touch the surface of it, surely. How did you cope with that? I mean, did you come out and try and play again, or did you kind of give up? What was the deal?
No, I never gave up. I just wanted to play the guitar, and I just had to always practice and try and pick the strings, because I used to pick very individual strings and then whack them, and all things that my right hand used to do, and left hand was okay. I could play the chords, but I couldn't play the actual notes right with the right hand. And that was what's so frustrating, was I could never get the rhythm, and I wanted rhythm.
That's what was all about. This is what we were saying earlier. Hit me with your rhythm stick. But your technique is, you can hear the right hand slapping the guitar and slapping the strings, and it's, you don't need a drummer. You've got it all going off in the right hand. And if you couldn't do that, that must have been tough for everybody, having an incredibly talented man not being able to express himself in a way that he would want to. That must have been tough for you, Julia.
Yeah, having to listen to
and listen to that racket.
Yeah,
and he still goes on. But the damage is as someone with a stroke.
Yeah.
So there's the spasticity that gets in the way of, he's going along fine and oomph, then it stops.
It's the wrong notes.
Brain doesn't connect. But, he's coped very well, and it was only because he was so laid back anyway. He used to say, people say, it's dreadful. And you said, yeah, but it could have been worse. I could have gone further on and been killed outright. That was always his attitude.
The world must have been surprised then when you came back, I guess is the phrase, and did some gigs. What year would those gigs have been? Early 2000s? Again, we're looking to Julia.
It's not that long ago, is it?
Was it 2010?
Could be.
No, it's later than that, isn't it?
Oh, really?
I don't remember. I didn't remember.
Well, it doesn't matter. Well,
it's not as long ago as that. It's since we've been here, so it's about 5 years ago.
Yeah.
So What made you do that after not playing since the accident?
Get some cash.
There you go.
We run out of shekels.
It was really down to Stuart Lee.
Oh, the comedian, yes.
He did. He was curating at the Queen Elizabeth Hall, is it?
On the South Bank. The South Bank.
I can't remember now. But he had. he wanted other singers to sing his songs.
Right.
And then, I think you did one with Pete. And then after that, Sidmouth wanted to do it again, and he learnt a couple of songs because we thought it would be nice if he did it. Mm. And that's really how it started then. Mm. Yeah.
Are you nervous going back on stage?
No.
No, not bothered?
No, I was never nervous. But only time I was nervous is if there was someone else on the bill who was a big flash guy, you know,
yeah.
Like Martin Carthy was on the bill, or Eric Clapton or somebody, I'd be nervous. But if I was by myself, I was the main star, yeah. I was okay, just...
Isn't that funny?
Enjoyed seeing him, yeah.
And you did a series of shows with your boy, Joe.
Joe, yeah, yeah. Yeah, it was great fun. That was, because Joe is a great character. And
I know it's not surprising, he's your son. He looks exactly like you. The eyebrows, the face, the everything. He looks incredible. It's uncanny.
He's a great kid. Yeah, he's a great. Well, what was good about it, wanted to laugh. He laughed at everything, and that's a great thing. It's a good thing.
Well, I've seen a video of you two, and it is hilarious. Yeah. You're just taking the piss out of each other for the whole show. And it's quite funny because the audience don't. It's sort of like they're there for the songs and they're there to see you, you know, thinking they'd probably never see you again. And then suddenly you two are just battling each other in the audience. Like, what is going on here?
I think it was Kennedy AO. We had to especially do a guitar break, and he played the break and it was complete rubbish. He fell wrong notes, he was out of time, everything. It was hopeless. And I was taking the fits out of him then.
Good. You were telling me you didn't even know he could play the guitar.
No, I didn't know, no. He'd learned over a period of time. He liked rock and roll.
Yeah.
He didn't like folk music much, no.
So what, he went away to college or something and came back?
He was working up in Newcastle. Working.
Yeah.
And a couple of chaps he shared flat with, they were into music, and so really that's when he started playing with them.
Right.
Sort of got interested.
And he was into, like you, was into rock and roll as well, slightly harder rock, I think, like Iron Maiden and stuff, you were saying.
Yeah.
What was it like being on stage with your son? That must have... I'm assuming it was a thrill, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was exciting. Yeah, it's good. It's great. Yeah. I was very proud of him. Yeah. He was a great, great kid. Yeah, it's really good. But he thinks nothing of it. He doesn't cash in on it.
No.
He could do loads of bookings, but he never does them. Never bothers to do.
Well, we were saying before, it must be tough because I imagine there was a certain amount of pressure on him to kind of be you, to be the next chapter in the Nick Jones, you know, a tribute to my father. And I guess if you don't want to do that, you don't want to do that.
No, he doesn't. No. He could earn a living playing the guitar and singing and that, but he would never bother to do it.
You did a couple of new songs in there. Now, there was a song that I saw that's in the documentary. There's a great documentary about you, and the song called Now.
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember that?
Yeah, it's a brilliant song.
It is a brilliant song. Well done for acknowledging it. Honestly, I think I listened to it. Yeah. You know, I'm going through a divorce and there's all kinds of stuff going on. So you get a poignant song like that, it just gets me there, man. It's spiritual.
The great thing is that the only point in time when we really know history is gone and the future is not here yet. And what is here is now. And that's made me realise that this is what's all about now.
Yeah.
I've got to be happy now. I don't want to be happy in 2 years' time, so I'll be dead then. Or I wasn't happy 2 years ago. That's boring. Yeah. You know, that's the now is important.
So when are you going to... You're writing songs all the time, are you?
I'm trying to, yeah.
How do you do it now if you're struggling with the guitar? Do you just kind of sit there with a tape recorder? What's the technique now for writing?
Well, if I feel that I've got something, that's an idea, I'll start writing things down and work with it that way. Just write things down and try and make it sound like it's a possible tune. And often the tunes themselves are simple, because the words express the tune, and people don't realise this, I think, that the tune is easy because the meaning of the words tells you what note to play. You know?
Right, really, okay.
Surprising.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
And what is there a plan? Are you going to record these songs? Are you going to release these songs?
That'd be a nice idea, yeah.
Well, do it then.
Do it.
Julia was telling me that you'd recorded a version of Now, but you and Joe didn't think it was good enough.
Yeah.
That you're perfectionists.
Yeah.
And you don't want to put it out.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't remember that.
It is going out though.
Is it going out?
Yeah. On one of Topic's introductions.
Oh, fantastic! Oh,
is that
right.
With the piano?
That's with Linda playing. Yeah. Piano. I don't think Joe's playing on it. No, he did it with piano.
And you must have heard his new songs. Any good? Oh, God, this is awkward.
No, this is awkward.
Nick wrote Now a few years ago. It was after the accident.
Right.
And he tends to get focused on one... I mean, we've got loads of drafts of things.
Right, OK.
But very few actually come to fruition.
Right, OK, I see.
Yeah. Maybe because they're crap.
Yeah. Nick's not a natural songwriter by his own admission.
Okay, so you kind of got to drag them out.
To get an idea, which is so philosophically worth doing. Yeah. And the Now song was once I got the idea there, that was it. And it was good.
You going to do any more shows? Or are you done playing live shows?
Who knows?
Really? It's not.
I might be dead in the future.
Oh, come on, man. We're all going to be dead in the future. Yeah. We're all dying, but.
Yeah, we're all slowly dying, yeah, that's true. But, maybe. I mean, it'd be nice to do two bookings every now and then, but.
Yeah.
If we could travel.
He doesn't like travelling.
Right.
Yeah. It's too much for him.
Yeah.
And Joe lives in the north.
Yeah.
Backing tapes. That's what everyone's doing now. You need backing tapes. You need some. Yeah. I'm joking, of course. You don't want backing tapes.
Yeah.
That would be terrible.
Yeah.
And his voice isn't that strong these days.
Yeah.
But this, I think, because listen, I'm a big fan of a lot of old groups. I like the Beach Boys and the Monkees and all of that kind of stuff.
Monkees are rubbish.
Shut up, Nick. Please don't. Don't want to fall out with you. But the Beach Boys are great.
Yeah,
but they're old, and a lot of their shows are kind of fueled by the love from the audience. Again, in that documentary and the DVD of the concert that you sent me, Julia, you can feel the love from the audience coming off towards you and Joe.
Yeah. It was good fun. Yeah.
Well, I
wasn't a Beach Boy, so.
There's only one original Beach Boy. The rest are all kids now doing it. That's what they do is they get their boys to come in and do it.
Yeah.
You've got any regrets? You don't seem like the kind of man that would have regrets.
I regret driving the wrong place.
Yeah.
I regret hitting the road.
Are you bitter about that? Is there any part of you that is like, shit, that was a bloody truck?
Well, no, because I mean that's what happened.
Wow.
It doesn't matter. You know?
Yeah.
Well, it does matter to me. But the worst thing I did, they made me have to play the guitar better.
Yeah.
But the good thing is, I was as a guitar player in the old days when I used to go in the folk clubs, I wasn't a very good guitarist. I had a reputation of being a decent guitarist, but it was not really true. I was a bit of a fake guitarist, a bit of a fake. Guitarist, yeah.
Is that what you think?
Yeah, I do.
Isn't that funny?
I've got a good rhythm.
Yeah.
The rhythm beats, but I used to tune the guitar so as it was something else.
But you did session work. You did session work for one of my mum's favourite singers, Barbara Dixon.
Yeah.
You you don't get asked to go and play on other people's records if you're crap.
No.
So you must have had something going for you.
Oh, yeah, got a rhythm.
Mm.
But... I never really understood how to play the natural the guitar as a main instrument. It was a clever instrument. The way the frets are laid down, which is it's a fantastic guitar. But I never used to play in a straight tuning.
Right.
I used to do fake tunings. Yeah.
But I think your playing is unconventional.
Oh, yeah.
But unique. It's very very. There are very few guitarists who can say. They've got their own unique style of playing, you know. And having recently come to your back catalogue, listening to your stuff, I can now tell, you know, I could tell your guitar playing from another guitarist because it's you.
Yeah.
It's your style.
The great thing about, I felt, what I liked about my guitar was that there's sort of space. There was lots of gaps, which people fill the gaps in themselves from listening. You know, and the words fill the gaps as well. But some people, they play too fast and they're too many notes, they wreck it. But one of the guitarists knocked me out was, say, like Martin Carthy. Right. He used to lose a lot of space.
Yeah.
And that was a great thing, the space. And I realised that what the guitarist needs is not to play the guitar too much, but to play at the right moment. You know, Ry Cooder, he was my space man. He was a great guitar player because there was lots of space in it. You know?
I think that's an excellent observation. When we do the radio show, me and my friend Catherine, one of our top weapons is silence. Because you get radio hosts and they just talk. They've got to fill the gap. No. Be silent.
Yeah.
Let the guests speak or let the listener, like you say, fill in the blanks. What guitar were you playing? You had a custom-made guitar, didn't you? Do you remember?
I wasn't remembering. Yeah, there was a... what's the...
Filed
guitar was right. The guy who made those was a great guy up in Manchester way. Mm. And he was a really nice chap, he was. Yeah. Mm. But his guitar was what I always had, yeah.
Hey, listen, it's so nice to see you both. Thank you so much for inviting me to your home. I've had a lovely drive through the moors, sheep and ponies in the middle of the road.
Watch out for them.
There's a sign saying drive slowly. Then they have a tally board of the number of sheep. We've lost 9 sheep this month and 3 ponies. Yeah. So
because they've changed, they've taken off the restrictions. It used to be 40 miles an hour,
right?
And they've done away with it.
Oh, so now it's anything goes.
Yeah.
Why would you do that?
Because who knows? I have no idea.
Oh no, it's that's crazy. I was driving very good. As soon as I saw the first sheep in the road, it's like, oh right, okay, this is where we are. Yeah. Let's just go nice and slow.
Because they sleep on the road. When the foals come, they just, dart across. You have to have your... We usually do just about 30, especially in lambing and foaling.
Yeah.
Well, it's very nice to meet you. Yes. Are you able to... I've got a couple of CDs to sign. Are you able to sign?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, beautiful, fine. I'm not going to put them on eBay. One's for me, one's for my mate's dad, who had a ticket to see you, and then you... And your bloody accident, so he will be... This will make up. This will make up.
Sam, sorry.
Hey, listen, Nick, so nice to meet you. Julia, thank you so much for inviting me into your home.
Yeah,
and I keep my fingers crossed that maybe I get to see you do a show one day.
Right.
Thank you, Nick.
Experience the unconventional.
Hello.
The unpredictable.
Don't you think that's a bit weird?
And the completely unorthodox.
It was my birthday.
With rule-free Ian Lee.
I was just trying to generate a bit of content.
The late night alternative with Ian Lee.
Hate alarm clock. Hate going to work.
On Talk Radio.
Hey, folks. I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.